It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
It's that time once again. Welcome to the morning show on the Independence Network. Jailbird Joey in the driver's seat this morning. And of course, as always, joined by my good friend and co-host, Mr. David Iverson, the illustrious from high above, who, you know, did a really nice thing last night. He knows that I've been having some sleep issues, a little bit of medical problems. And in a show of solidarity, he didn't sleep much last night either. Isn't that right, David?
That's exactly right, man. How you doing this morning, Joey?
Well, I'm feeling a little better because I know a little bit more. I did go and see the doctor yesterday, but you know, it's going to be a tough trek back over the next couple of months. I got to get some sleep medical stuff kind of ironed out. The bottom line is I'm just not getting enough restful sleep because all my ailments are fighting each other. Apparently, arthritis and nerve damage don't work well. And when you throw a little bit of sleep apnea in there with some restless leg syndrome, they just all, you know, they fight, and I'm not getting what I need at night. So, you know, the bottom line is it's a process. We hate that word, but the truth is it's going to take a little time, a little doing, and we'll get back on the ball. But yeah, it was better than a bouquet of flowers hearing, you know, you went out there and had a restless night of sleep, just like I do, showing me that you really care about what I'm going through.
Really,
so I appreciate
care.
That.
Yes.
Apparently, we have another op-ed. Yeah, the Wildfile has just been throwing up these fluff balls and op-eds ever since the session ended. I don't know. Not a whole lot of news coming out of Wildfile, but you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You don't have to hear the Liz Storer side of all of it. But we have another op-ed coming out of Wildfile from Amy Edmonds. And if you don't know who Amy Edmonds is, she's a former Wyoming legislator down there in Cheyenne. She's actually from Cheyenne. She represented Cheyenne. Who didn't do anything very notable, annoyed a lot of people, and then got out of the legislature, but spent a whole lot of time being a Liz Cheney party boss and was one of the top, you know, I guess, counter arguments while the Republican Party was going through its accountability process with the former representative. And so this is not terribly surprising to hear from her, but the title or the headline of the article is "The Rancor in the Legislature is Hurting Wyoming." And this is another one of those pieces that's talking about this false sense of civility and how we've always done it and Wyomingism. So we'll jump into that. I love the fact that she starts her op-ed with a quote from former Republican presidential nominee Nikki Haley, who recently said, "The tone at the top matters." Okay, well, if we're going to talk about leadership and we're going to talk about rancor and we're going to talk about civility, you know, I don't know why you'd pick Nikki Haley. Actually, I take that back. I know why she picks Nikki Haley, the same reason she picked Liz Cheney. She's a nutball that wants to talk about feelings and hide actual procedures behind this, I don't know, veil of supremacy, what do you call it, elitism. So it's basically a big complaint about how poorly a lot of the legislators acted in the session this year. And if you read through the article, I'm going to read a little bit of it here. She basically praises the establishment elitists and blames everything on conservatives and the Freedom Caucus. Ms. Edmonds goes on to write, "The 2024 budget session fell woefully short of this ideal of being devoted of the tones of statesmanship. Rather, it was filled with the opposite and reflective of the sickness we are all watching in our national political life. Rancor, divisiveness, and acts of retribution were all witnessed at our Capitol this year." And I'm going to stop there before I get into her butt kissing of Albert Summers and Ogden Driscoll and ask, David, you were there almost every day. I was there almost every day. Did you see any acts of retribution, any personal attacks, or anything that we've actually seen in the past that has come up as, you know, individual personalities attacking other personalities this year in the legislature?
First, let me just say that words matter. that we can't just throw around terms that don't have a universal meaning. So when you use terms like rancor, divisiveness, acts of retribution, we need to understand what those words mean. So, you know, they might mean different things to different people. And obviously, I have a different definition than Amy Edmonds does. But to directly answer your question, no. Actually, what I saw is a bunch of people that fundamentally disagree on a number of issues treat each other with a modicum of respect. I didn't see any fist fights on the floor. I didn't see any name calling. I did see a lot of the use of the rules to achieve one legislative maneuver or another one, but I didn't see any incivility. So let's just talk first, Joey, about what that word incivility means. You and I can have a civil discussion. We can disagree civilly. And literally what that means is we have a conversation about our differences and it doesn't end up in a fist fight. Well, if that's the definition, then that's exactly what this session was. Now, there were a couple of instances where people vehemently disagreed and they weren't exactly civil. For example, calling an entire chamber a bunch of idiots or calling them an embarrassment. That might be an example of being incivil. But as far as anybody being mean or nasty from the conservative side, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, and I think it was summed up pretty well by Dave Kinski when he made his point of, you know, this isn't rancor. This is just politics. It's the hurly-burly.
Yeah.
We see it all the time. And the fact you point out is really what I'm going to continue to focus on was, in the past, we have seen individuals, whether they be on the conservative side or not, you hear about the conservatives acting out more because that's what the, you know, mainstream Wyoming liberal media likes to focus on. But they went from doing that somehow magically. Again, I didn't see a whole lot of, you know, personal attacks on the floor, even in the halls, to using the process, using the rules. And that's where we got into that conversation that we're going to have again today of this is the death rattle. This is the end. They know they're losing. And this whole idea of, you know, when they say civility, what I hear is subjugation. Get back under our thumb. Shut up. We're doing it the way we want to do it. And you haven't been here long enough, or you're not Wyoming enough, or whatever it is, to have an opinion or to push back whatsoever. And the other thing that constantly comes up, if you can't point out that they're violating the rules, violating the law, or, I don't know, committing acts of violence and assault on the floor by shoulder checking Tom James. Oh, again, that wasn't a conservative either. Then what do you have to get down to? It's, oh, well, you know, the way we've always done thing and what's best for Wyoming. And what do they say? They say addressing issues that matter to Wyoming, not your political ideals or the, you know, principles of your party. I'm kind of sick of hearing that, because if we don't have uniform principles that we can all agree on, and especially in order to hold our legislators accountable to, does the process even matter? No. So especially people like Wendy Schuller, you know, I'm out here representing my constituents and answering the emails that I get the most of. Okay, but based on what? So again, I'm seeing another situation where, you know, nothing is really being done. Believe me, if rules were being violated, laws were being violated, or it was really rancorous enough, there would have been a hell of a lot more formal complaints through the LSO or to the presiding officers of each chamber, and they would have dealt with it. They have in the past. Remember, they stripped Anthony Bouchard of all of his committee assignments in the past just for his attitude, not specifically you did anything wrong. So there's another example that what Amy Edmonds is saying is happening isn't really happening, because nobody really got in trouble this session.
No, not for a single thing. And even when they broke the law, Cowboy State Politics and the Independence Network exposed that the Wyoming caucus was absolutely violating Wyoming statute by allowing lobbyists and political operatives to use Clark Stith's office. Now, that's absolutely against Wyoming statute. They're breaking the law. So if you want to talk about people who are being incivil or rancorous or divisive, maybe we ought to talk about people that can't even follow Wyoming statutes.
That, and I'm going to put some onus on the LSO, because I know there's formal complaints that have been filed by people who live in Cheyenne, people who are represented by Clark Stith, you know, every angle to try to make sure that there was standing in the complaint. There were formal complaints. You didn't hear about them. The LSO didn't do anything about them. Why is that? We've talked about this in the past again. They take these complaints about, in this case, illegalities going on in the legislature, and they hand them off to the team that's being complained about. Hey, Halbert Summers, will you make a ruling on this? Oh, no, we're far too busy to even recognize that that's an issue. And this goes back years. Dan Zwanitzer proven to live out of his district while he's redistricting his new house into his old district. And they wouldn't even vote in a positive majority to investigate whether it's legitimate or not. None of that negates the fact that an actual crime happened. The legislature, the House, they are not a law enforcement body. So we have a system that is being broken the right way. You know, I think the biggest fear is, oh, wait, they're getting their poop in a group. They're figuring out how to work together and use the rules. And this is just another progression in not being progressive. And they hate it. The liberals, the redcoats, especially the leadership, they hate it because they truly believe that they are owed these leadership positions and this false sense of respect because they've been around so long and now they have a title. And they seem to forget every time. You don't have power. You have responsibility. And the further up you go the ladder and, you know, the bigger title, and as soon as you get an office, you got a position that gives you an office in the legislature, you have a massive deal of responsibility, a great deal of responsibility to the people and to the work of the people of the state. And I just don't see that. And when we get more garbage like this from people like Amy Edmonds, oh, just bow down to your legislative masters and let the real Wyoming legislators who have been there forever. You know, that's most of the problem. These multi-generational Wyoming caucus legislators saying, oh, you're going to destroy Wyoming because you're not actually dealing with the problems and you're not doing it the right way because you're not from Wyoming. Where do you think these problems came from? Entrenched multi-generational Wyomingites sitting in the legislature doing all this business for personal gain for decades.
Exactly right. So it sounds to me like, Joey, we need to redefine all of those words that Amy Edmonds used: rancor, divisiveness, acts of retribution. The true definition of what she's saying is they're disagreeing with us. That's essentially what the whole thing boils down to in her op-ed, that they're not doing it our way anymore, and therefore they're not being civil. I mean, it's totally backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, again, it's reflective. They keep saying we don't want D.C. style politics, yet they still engage in that two-tier justice system that D.C. is very fond of doing and does on a regular basis. It's those rules for thee, but not for me. All of the catchphrases, you know, the real grittiness of politics is fine, but you have to realize, and I'm talking to the people directly here, we're not joking when we say we're in the middle swamp when we're down there in Cheyenne. Our legislature is just as corrupt and wayward as Washington, D.C., and people need to stop doing this nostalgic love of Wyoming. Oh, we're better because we're super Republican. That doesn't make us conservative. That doesn't make us, you know, capable. And it doesn't necessarily mean that our legislature is doing anything that's good for the people, good for Wyoming, or good for liberty, which is my biggest hangup, just because they're a bunch of Republicans. We do have a swamp problem in our legislature. We do have a swamp problem in Wyoming. If it's unpalatable for you to hear that, hey, get involved, join us, help us change it. Not so that all the conservative ideals always win and we just shift the ownership of power to, you know, what you would call our side, but so that the procedures and the work of the people are given the proper amount of respect. Yeah, Amy Edmonds goes on in her story to say what's causing all of this. And again, it's the go-to argument. Let's see, quote, in part, nationalized factions have come into our legislature and enthrall bitter tribalism that continues to grow and fester year after year. with the creation of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus several years ago. Okay, is this just going to be the punching bag for everything you don't like?
Yes.
The Wyoming Freedom Caucus did. It's the Wyoming Freedom Caucus did that. It doesn't piss me off. It almost amuses me. The thing that pisses me off is that when they point that finger of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, oogie boogie boo, normally they're pointing it at people who aren't members of the Freedom Caucus.
All the time. When there's an article published about the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, and usually you see this from Trotsky Wolfson, he says, well, there's 26 members of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. The truth is, there's probably, I think there's only 12. There's not 26. It's only a select group of legislators on the floor that who are actually members of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. The rest of them are just conservatives. So let's take perhaps the most highest profile one of those, Mark Jennings. Mark Jennings is not a part of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, yet he is one of the most conservative members in the House of Representatives. Clarence Stivar. Usually, if you look at on any of the rating sites, it's Mark Jennings and Clarence Stivar right at the top. They kind of trade back and forth who's number one and who's number two. But they're not members of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. They're just conservatives. Our pal Ken Pendergraft wasn't even invited to join the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. So it's an attempt by the media to paint all conservatives with the same brush. If you don't agree with us, you must be part of them. So if you'd like to talk about the people who are creating bitter tribalism, it really is the Wyoming left, because they're the ones that are saying, oh, this Freedom Caucus over here, and if you're a member or not, that doesn't really matter. We're just going to paint you in that group. That is what creates tribalism. To create, in philosophy, you would talk about it in terms of an us versus them dichotomy, that you have two groups and it's our way versus your way, instead of let's work together and talk this whole thing out. I can't tell you how many times this year I heard something like the phrase, debate is gone in the Wyoming legislature. And I mean, I heard it from several different legislators who have been there for, you know, a fairly long time. But no more do you have debate on the floor where you can actually change somebody else's mind. Even on, you know, very, very Wyoming issues, guns, freedom, land, water rights, those sorts of things. There's a position of the Wyoming caucus and there's a position of the conservatives. And never the two shall meet. It's if you're with us, you vote this way. If you're with them, you vote that way. Well, the truth is, on the conservative side, yes, they all kind of have a similar way of thinking. So, yeah, in the end, they vote in favor of liberty and freedom, as opposed to spending a whole crap load of money and making government bigger. So I think the people that are creating the tribalism in the Wyoming legislature are those people in the media like Amy Edmonds and Trotsky Wolfson and everybody on the other side. But there again, you hear me saying, well, it's us versus them. But the truth is, you have a group of legislators that don't want to toe the, quote, party line, end quote. And understand that when I use the word party in reference to the legislature, I mean it in a different way than I do the state Republican Party. Because if everybody was going along with the version of the Republican Party that exists in the Wyoming legislature, Amy Edmonds and Trotsky Wolfson wouldn't be writing all of the articles like this. In fact, they'd be saying, look at what a great job we're doing.
And I think that's what they're hearkening back to is, you know, at the end, the call to action in Amy Edmonds' story here is this rancor is not the norm for Wyoming, and it doesn't have to be so. Okay, first of all, let's go back to, I don't know, 1913, where the legislators wouldn't even allow themselves to appear on the same picture board as each other, Republicans and Democrats. And one of those picture boards has a big old tear in the middle of it because somebody picked it up off the wall and smashed it over the head of another legislator.
Yeah.
Come on. We do have a history of ruckus cantankerism in the legislature. And okay, fine. That was over 100 years ago. The reason I think that people are finally starting to have to push back and say, oh, this is never how we did it, is because the people were never watching before. You know, before COVID, it was fairly recent that if you wanted to know anything about the legislature, you either had to trust the media or show up at the legislature yourself. There was no Zoom. They weren't broadcasting over radio. We're talking about over 100 years of legislative action and interaction where none of the normal Wyoming people knew what was going on unless the news decided to tell you. And we all know how the media loves to spin things. And they were even held less accountable back in the day. So her saying this rancor is not the norm for Wyoming, what she should be saying is, I know you're not used to seeing the reality of what's happening in the legislature, but it's always kind of been this way. And we don't like the fact that people are waking up and pushing back. But of course, she goes into her call of action at the very end saying, we can stop it right now by refusing to support those who would sacrifice our state sovereignty on the altar of centralized political homogeny and elevate instead those who practice good governance, statesmanship, and civility. That's how you know this is the death rattle. That's how you know it's scared. She goes in with all these vague accusations. She never says, Sherry Steinmetz did this, Dave Kinski said that. She never poses any legitimate quantifiable accusations. It's just all glimmering generalities. Then she quotes the leadership of each chamber and then comes to her call of action of stop electing these people. We need to get back to doing it the way we always did it, which is you shut up, you stay uninformed, and let us do what we do the way we do it and call it good Wyomingism. So it's pretty obvious what this is. I love the fact that they're continuing to put out these op-eds or give these quotes to Wyofile and, you know, the Cowpie, proving what we have been saying for the last couple months of they're terrified. They realize not only have the people woken up, but the conservative legislators have decided to work together and utilize the rules and the procedures to affect the business that should be done. You're right. Debate is dead in the legislature because last time I checked, you're not allowed to debate on the floor or in a committee in legislature. You're allowed to present facts and you're allowed to answer questions. I would love to see debate on the floor, but it's been dead for years. They disallowed it probably because people were smashing each other over the heads with glass framed photos of the legislature when the debate went sour. So there's things that people don't understand yet, but we're getting closer to at least having access to that full understanding. And I guarantee you, every time you see one of these op-eds from Amy Edmonds, Jerry Obermuller, Tom Lubnow, there's always going to be a call to action at the end of get rid of these conservatives and let's get back to the old good old boy network of Wyoming style politics where everybody pretends to get along and all we end up doing is screwing the citizen.
Yep. Drinking tea with our pinkies hanging out and, you know, reminiscing about the genteel nature of the chamber. One of the reasons why they made debate so difficult on the floor is YouTube, because everybody can see what they're doing. One of the FOIA requests that I sent out was video of the House chamber on March 8th. Now, why would I choose the last day of the session to get video of what was happening on the House floor? Because some of your legislators were sort of misbehaving on the floor. And, you know, the YouTube video... the YouTube video, you couldn't see what was happening. You know, they had the little video screen, little tiny little corner thing right up in the corner, and you couldn't see what was happening. But there were some things that were happening on the floor. And now we have YouTube, so Wyoming citizens can see exactly what's happening. And when you go back to when you're talking about debate, they don't like it that Wyoming citizens, your normal everyday Joes, that should just shut up and listen to the legislators, they don't like it that we can all see their stupid reasoning for why they're doing all of the things that they're doing, legislating in the budget, breaking their own rules so that they can get what they want. They're vote buying with high schools. Now you have YouTube and everything's out in the open. But of course, Joey, I suppose that that's weaponizing the process.
Well, you know, weaponizing transparency at least. But let me break down what you just said a little, because even I had questions when you told me you were asking for that. Here's proof that what we're saying at least has some merit. Watch the legislative YouTube feed. And anytime they go to recess or anytime, you know, they're on a break, something like that, you'll see that screen pop up that says the House will reconvene at the sound of the gavel, or the House will reconvene at 2 p.m. And then you'll have this, sometimes you'll have this little box in the corner that shows the far wide shot of the legislative floor, and you can't see what's going on. And they do that on purpose. They do that so you can't see what's going on the floor. If the microphones were on, you might be able to pick something up, but this isn't about playing gotcha. This is about, they still run, like you said, shenanigans on the floor, even though they know there's a camera up there.
Yeah.
Now, the video you asked for wasn't the YouTube, you know, hey, show me everything that's going on in this little box. You asked for the security footage, because a lot of these shenanigans also go on out in the hallway. And I'll agree with you. I was there for a little bit of it, and I watched pretty closely. And yeah, at least that last day, March 8th, but even a couple days before, especially on the House side, it turned into like a legislative kegger and karaoke jam. And some of your legislators were not only acting a fool, but if they got in their car and drove after that last day of session, there might, well, I guess there's also a law saying legislators can't be arrested while session is live. So it would have to be a one on, you know, at the discretion of the officer, whether session was still going or not. But it was interesting to see. And again, like I said, I didn't know we had so many untalented dancers and horrific singers in the House of Representatives. And call me a liar if you want, but that's why we do things like request the additional video, show up ourselves and record things, because these are the things that people not only don't see, but don't believe when they hear them.
And let's talk about the high capacity assault microphones for a second, Joey. Now, from the very beginning, when you were in the Senate, there were several people on that Senate floor that really didn't like the idea that there was a constant hot mic. I wonder why that is. It couldn't be that they don't want Wyoming citizens to know what's happening on the floor that belongs to Wyoming citizens. They didn't like the idea that there was someone up in the gallery recording what was happening on the floor. Now, the guys in the House, at first, they didn't really like the microphone. In fact, every opportunity they had to give me a hard time, to come up and say, oh, you know, your microphone is too close to the glass. Would you move it a little bit? You know, oh, it's facing the wrong way. Well, all of that was an attempt to say, uh-oh, there's a hot mic and everything that we're doing on the floor is being recorded. Because in the past, again, like I said, in the past, they didn't have YouTube. And Wyoming citizens couldn't see everything that they're doing. But now, all that's changed. And so when you're showing what politicians are actually doing, according to Amy Edmonds, that's now divisive and rancorous. I mean, it's absolutely the opposite of what they're telling you, in what she's trying to tell you in this op-ed.
Yeah. It's interesting. And it's funny how that never officially went anywhere. The last word I got on it was when I was covering JCC2 and Ogden Driscoll saw me sit down with my pocket recorder, and he decided to make sure that I knew that you do know that purposefully recording personal conversations is a violation of the rules of the Senate. I said, do you have any evidence that I've ever attempted to or actually done that? And even if I happen to have any of that, where have you heard it broadcast? I was kind of pushing him to force him to listen to the show. Like, you can't just make these accurate. But it was just the concept. It wasn't even the fact that the mics were hot. It was the fact that they were present. Because a lot of the times, if they're in recess or we're going to lunch, I'm not leaving my equipment running. I'm not going to burn up the batteries. And I'm not going to leave it set up. I need to take it with me for security purposes. They just did not like the fact that it was present. But even when I walked into that appropriations chamber and sat down with a hand recorder, it wasn't even the big Omicron microphone, you know, I had five journalists, quote unquote, sitting behind me, but I'm the one Ogden Driscoll wanted to talk to. So that's further proof they're scared. They know their way of doing things. Their smoke-filled rooms and their good old boy club and their behind closed doors thing is over. In fact, if they actually just did it behind closed doors, they'd be much better off. They're so used to and comfortable with their corruption that they're worried now, oh, wait a minute. We have the standard and the posture of usually doing this right out in the open on the floor and nobody catches us. Now, hey, just go behind closed doors.
Yeah, yeah. Intentionally conceal what you're doing and be open about it. Hey, we're doing this behind closed doors so we can't be recorded. See how that plays out.
And one last thing about our, you know, high capacity digital coverage. I think it would be a bonus for all legislators, even the ones we disagree with or give a hard time to based on their actions, because the rest of the quote unquote journalists in the room are just sitting there with their laptops, writing down their opinion of what they're seeing happen with no evidence. So if it does happen and it's not on YouTube, the Independence Network is the only place you're going to get evidence that something another reporter said happened didn't actually happen, because we're the only ones with evidence of yes. that. So you need to get back into the reality of what's actually going on, what your job is as a legislator, and, you know, stop doing things like attempting to violate the First Amendment or have one of your paid for PAC cronies attempt to intimidate the press.
Yeah, well, that happened too. And, you know, as irritating as that was, I really wasn't all that shocked, and nothing ever came of it. But it was a blatant attempt to intimidate me and the Independence Network and Cowboy State Politics to try to get me to shut up, to try to get us to back off using Wyoming State Police. So, you know, the folks that Amy Edmonds is talking about, they really are losing their grip on, normally I would say reality, but they're losing their grip on power, and it absolutely terrifies them. That's why you see all of their acolytes in the Wyoming media jump to their defense and try to attack in any way that they can conservative legislators. Because, you know, Joey, there's no evidence whatsoever that the state of Wyoming is engaging in completely unscientific, and, you know, they would never engage in any sort of this stuff you're seeing in the mainstream media. You know, they never would. The great state of Wyoming would never suggest that there's anything more than two genders. You know, that's only things that we see on the media, and it's only things that Representative Jeanette Ward brings up. I mean, that sort of stuff doesn't really happen in Wyoming. I mean, you've heard that, haven't you, Joey?
I have a feeling we're about to trudge into another, oh, that's not happening in Wyoming, we don't need rules or any oversight on that, while it's happening in Wyoming type of situation.
Yeah, well, you know, we have to be inclusive. You know, we heard from Tom Lubnow that our big tent is gone. So the Wyoming bureaucracy seems to think that it's okay to just completely make things up on their own. I have in my hot little hands an application to the Wyoming Retirement System. And I'll scan this and put it up at Cowboy State Politics on the website so you can see it. But at the top of it, it says Participant Enrollment Government 457B Plan. And it says the Wyoming Retirement System 457 Deferred Compensation Plan. And over in the section that where you would put down your date of birth and your date of hire and your social security number and all of those kind of mundane demographic details, there's a number of checkboxes. And let me read to you what they say. Female, male, non-binary, or unspecified. I didn't know, according to Wyoming law, that we recognized a gender of being non-binary, or if you just don't have a gender at all. But here it is, in black and white, literally, on a Wyoming government document saying that there's more than two genders.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm almost surprised. I don't get surprised anymore, but I get close every now and then. This makes sense as to why it was so important to kill Jeanette Ward's House Bill 50, the What is a Woman Act, so quickly and not even let it be introduced for discussion on the floor or assignment to a committee, because it's one of those situations like we have with Chloe's Law. Oh, this stuff isn't a real problem. All this stuff isn't going on. But yet we have official government documents saying we already recognize and do this stuff that law would undo. This form would be a violation of the law had House Bill 50 passed. They'd have to change the form and start, you know, operating in a realm of reality, I guess. I just find it terribly interesting that a bureaucracy can go ahead and, I don't know, change the standard or the actions of the government just because they're unelected willy-nilly without any legislative oversight. And this is why when people say, oh, these laws don't matter, these rules don't matter, they do matter. And this is another reason why. And it's not just because we want to say, hey, it's got to be male or female, because that's reality. That's part of it. But there are other benefits, other access to certain types of, I don't know, healthcare amenities that women will get that men don't. You know, last time I checked, we call them, I don't know, food stamps or whatever, but there's another program in there called WIC. That's women, infants, and children. Now, I guess men with children and infants can apply, but by the title of that, you know, only women are qualified for that program. So there are certain, you know, standards based on biological gender that already exist in many of our programs, departments, and processes here in the state of Wyoming, and it's taxpayer funded. So not surprised again, but
it's not happening in Wyoming. I don't know what you're talking about, Joey. That sort of stuff isn't happening. We don't need this What Is a Woman Act.
Yeah, that's the argument, and here's proof that maybe it would be a good idea to define some of these things. We've had this conversation. I wouldn't even mind if the retirement form said, are you a bull or are you a cow with no other option? I would accept that because at least that's established in law already. But it's also wasteful. You know, I've spoken a couple times about back in the day, Kathy Conley had a piece of legislation to have a study on the gender wage gap. And it was co-sponsored by our good friend Marty Halverson. And Marty was brilliant in this. Everyone's like, how are those two working together? Well, they weren't working together. They were just working on the same bill. Kathy Conley wanted to prove that the gender wage gap was real and a problem. And Marty Halverson said, yeah, let's do the study and prove that it's not. And that's what ended up happening. But there's still that belief that the gender pay gap is real. But if the gender pay gap is real and gender isn't real, it's fluid and optional, isn't that something very, very interesting? And why are we wasting our money trying to prove something related to a situation that doesn't exist? Gender isn't real is the argument from the left. So how is there a gender pay gap? How are there all these programs in Wyoming? What is it? Climb Wyoming, Rise Wyoming, whatever it is, making sure women have all the opportunities to get into trades. And it's not that I'm anti-woman. I'm anti-idiocy. If we don't have a definition for these things, then how do we have programs related to these things utilizing a definition? Because I'll tell you right now, if I didn't throw on a dress and claim actively and publicly that I was a woman and go through all of the goofiness that happens in that neighborhood of make-believe land, you know, of ideals, they wouldn't let me join Climb Wyoming and get free trade school education because I'm not a woman. I'm not part of that group. So again,
well,
this is why they're seeing so much problems in the legislature. Legitimate legislation is coming up that fixes and addresses issues that are being perpetrated behind our back through the bureaucracy. And this is why some of this stuff does need to be codified and people need to get over the emotional aspect of it. The government has processes that it needs to address, and we are not addressing them while we're wasting tons of money with conflicting positions on, in this case, it's gender.
So a big question is, how did these things show up on an official State of Wyoming document? Well, the document was produced by a bureaucracy, namely the Wyoming Retirement System. And if you look down at the bottom of it, and I know that you don't have a copy of it in your hand, but usually at the bottom of any sort of government document, you'll see a revision number and the date. And the date on this one is 11/8/2023. So this is a fairly recent document. This isn't something that has been around for, you know, years and years, and it's the same form that everybody fills out. This is something that happened last November, so right before the legislative session. And it's an example of a bureaucracy doing something because it's not expressly prevented. You know, there's nothing in statute that says, no, you have to create the form in this way. It's the classic argument that liberals use with the Constitution all of the time. Well, it doesn't say that you can't do that. Well, that's precisely the opposite of how our system works. The law says what it says, and it means what it means. But the problem is, and until very recently, we didn't think that we needed a law to say this is what a man and this is what a woman is. But evidently we do, because there's some bureaucrat up in office somewhere that thinks that being non-binary is actually a thing, or that you could have an unspecified gender, that perhaps your gender changes with your mood. Those things are all in fantasy land. And the biggest problem here is that you have a government bureaucrat being allowed to do whatever they want to do based on their own political ideology that is pushed by the mainstream media, by special interest groups, namely groups like Sarah Burlingame's Wyoming Equality, or, you know, the Wyoming Education Association. Don't think that the teachers union is not one of the groups that is pushing all of this gender stuff on schools. On Cowboy State Politics, oh man, now it's been a year, maybe 2 years ago, where I exposed their Safe and Just Schools cadre. That's their little group that has the logo with the socialist fist on it. You can still find it on the internet. It's on their website. But all of these policies are being pushed by special interest groups, and there are bureaucrats inside Wyoming bureaucracies that are taking them up and making them policy. See, there's the biggest problem, Joey, because the bureaucracies are creating the policies because there isn't a statute to prevent them. And we're in this weird space that, you know, unless it says you can't do it, you can absolutely do it, even though we know that government has enumerated powers. But this is a classic example of the swamp that we have in Wyoming.
I would absolutely agree. And this is exactly why we need legislation like What is a Woman Act, because the way these systems are set up, and I push back on this quite a bit sometimes, is that there is no accountability. There is no oversight if it's not in violation of another statute. It says the department shall promulgate rules.
Yeah, I love
it
that.
It says you get a block grant. Spend it on whatever you want. There is no oversight unless it's already in the green books of this must be done this way, not just for your department. Again, this is going to go back to my position on universal fundamental principles equally applied across the board. That's why we need the What is a Woman Act. We don't need to overregulate the Wyoming retirement system. It may need some oversight, but across the board, we need to say, hey, all departments, all functions of Wyoming government believe or must follow this to this, you know, parameter. This is the guideline, and these are the outer limits. That's as far as you can go without violating the law. You know, you hear Harriet Hageman talk about it all the time. In fact, I think she's got a bill that's up in front of Congress right now saying, hey, certain actions cannot be taken by a bureaucratic agency of unelected officials without the permission of Congress. And that's what a lot of her legislation, I think she put in a 72-word bill as opposed to 1,500 pages that specifically says this Rock Springs management plan cannot be implemented solely on the authority of the Department of the Interior director. That's it. It has to go through. Hey, go ahead, be a bureaucracy, manage some things, develop some plans. But before you execute or publish, you have to come in and make sure that at very least you get a sign off from the executive branch, which I'm not a fan of, but it's got to go through the legislative process. It has to get, you know, signed off by the people that are accountable to the people. So I'm not thrilled to see that you found that piece of paper, but I'm also not surprised that it's out there. I doubt the Department of Retirement Services or whatever it is are the only department out there that has that. I haven't checked the Wyoming voter registration, what the new revision is lately, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it there either. And again, that's going to, it begs more questions than it answers. If the state law in Title 22 says Precinct committee man, precinct committee women shall appear on the ballot, and you have more options than man or woman on the registration form. How do you, why even have a law regulating that if you can't actually define it and regulate it, you know, in the realm of reality? So,
but let's just touch on that for a minute, Joey. So there is in Wyoming a man who is, who occupies a, and what I'm getting at is Artemus Langford, or what's his name? Dylan.
Dallin James Langford.
Yeah, Dallin James Langford. Did he actually win a precinct seat, or did they just nominate him to be their state committee woman?
I believe they appointed him, they being this Democratic Central Committee in Albany County. So the county level Democrat Party appointed him to a vacancy, I believe. I'm not sure. I doubt he ran on the ballot, but they did elect him as the state committee woman in Albany County, and he now sits on the Wyoming Democrat Party State Central Committee as a committee woman. But those positions, state committee man, state committee woman, not just the precinct, are also outlined in statute. So even though it's not a public ballot, you know, I went and did some digging because I filed a formal complaint on this, not because I am necessarily anti-trans. You can be as goofy and, you know, unrealistic as you want to be, but because the law says this. So either let's change the law and let you guys be as sick and depraved as you want in your own tent, and we don't care. Stop doing public ballots for your private party business. Or let's enforce the law as it's written. But I got the birth certificate and I got the old voter registration out of Fremont County for Dallin James Langford. And it says he's a dude.
Yeah.
Everything is checked male. So this is why we need well-defined statute. This is why the statutes that are coming up or the bills that are coming up that people say, that's not really important. Yeah, it is. Because it speaks to the lack of clarity and the inability to execute the law as written and intended because the legislature has failed to fully and properly define it. And this is all based on, I don't know, don't want to appear to look mean or bad. I've never heard a legislature or legislator say transgenderism isn't real and we should criminalize the concept. I've never heard that. What I've heard is you can do whatever you want, but when it comes to the business of the state, we operate in a realm of reality and provable biological data, and this is all that we recognize. There's lots of things in the state of Wyoming that have nothing to do with the government of the state of Wyoming. So, I don't know, six in one hand, half dozen in the other. It is an issue. It is happening in Wyoming, and I believe it needs to be addressed. Otherwise, you're going to have what we have here, unelected bureaucrats who have the statutory authority to promulgate rules and zero oversight of the legislature, putting garbage like that further confuses and exacerbates the situation on forms that are now official documents of the government.
Yeah. Well, and I hate that phrase, the department shall promulgate rules. Literally what that says is the department shall do whatever the heck they want.
Because there's no follow-up.
Yeah, there's no follow-up.
The rest of that legislature, when you put into legislation, the department shall promulgate rules, it should be followed up. The department shall promulgate rules, comma, to be approved by the legislature in the next session.
Problem solved. So, Joey, don't we have a whole bunch of lists that Moonbeam Gordon hasn't done anything with?
Well, we have one list of a whole bunch of bills, and let's see, today is Thursday the 21st, so he's really got until tomorrow to sign these. If you read the clock, the way the statute lays it out, he really has until Saturday, but I don't know if he'll do any work. Normally, waiting till Friday to do a bunch of horrible crap is the norm. There's some disillusion with how the news cycle works and what you're going to hide it or it's not going to get that much attention. Well, the Independence Network exists now, and you're going to get all the attention in the world. But so far we've got, and I spoke about this on my show earlier this week, and nothing's really changed. 10 House bills and 20 Senate files still sitting on the governor's desk that include a lot of the hot button issues that got through the legislative process this year, including House Bill 148, regulation of abortions. Not surprised that's still sitting on the governor's desk. The same governor who vetoed the infant born alive means of care act a couple of years ago, saying, oh, no, We got enough laws protecting babies we're trying to murder. Don't worry about it. So I don't have a whole lot of faith that that's, at very least, it's not going to get a signature. Let's just say that. None of the property tax bills have been signed by the governor yet. I don't know where he's going to go with that. I don't know if he's going to pick his favorite one and veto the rest, find a couple that work together. But again, we're in a situation where we have the lamest of lame duck governors. He's not accountable to anybody. He can't be reelected. And it really depends on what his plans for the future are on how some of this goes. And my personal take on any of these property tax bills is some of them have components that are okay. Some of them are dismal, but none of them are permanent. So no matter what the governor does, you're looking at a year, maybe 2 years of what looks like a little bit of a kickback, but it's not going to amount to much and it's not going to stick around for very long. And as we covered earlier, at least on the House side, they don't even want to give you $80 a year back. They think that that's way too much. So we'll have to see where the governor goes on that. One we're probably going to talk about on Crosstalk Live, education savings account, the House Bill 166. That seems to be problematic for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, including good old Christian nationalist Jerry Obermueller. Or is that anti-Christian nationalist? I can't tell. Between what he says and what he does, they're just two different things.
Weird.
But the Wyoming Education Association has a huge problem with that bill, too.
Well, the Wyoming Education Association has a huge problem with a lot of things. Now, let's just be very clear about who they are. It is a teachers' union, right? Now, in Wyoming, we don't have a lot of unions, and in fact, there's some government agencies that say, well, we don't deal with unions. Wyoming's a right-to-work state, so there's no collective bargaining. But don't take that to mean that we don't have a very powerful union in Wyoming, and it is the Wyoming Education Association. And they're going to buck anything that takes any of their money away or any money they think is theirs. And they're going to buck anything that takes any of their power away. That is, power to indoctrinate your kids. So, yeah, they have a big problem with the education savings accounts bill. And actually, they have a big problem with anybody who tries to tell any Wyoming school how to operate, namely the Wyoming legislature.
This is probably another topic that we'll get into on Crosstalk. I want to kind of group them together because we've got a couple of good examples of it. But yesterday, we talked about the Sheridan City Council spending a bunch of money on charities. And you read the portion of the Constitution that says you can't do this. And
yes,
the only loophole at the end was except for helping the poor or something.
Yeah, necessary.
But right in the middle.
Necessary help for the poor.
There you go. Right in the middle, it doesn't just say charity, nonprofit. It also says association.
Yep.
So any of our tax dollars that are being taken automatically out of teachers' checks and given to the Wyoming Education Association, any of our tax dollars that are going to pay for county commissioners to be part of the County Commissioner Association, county clerks to be part of their association, the NAGS, the $75,000 a year we pay for Bridget Hill to be a member of the National Association of Attorneys General. It has association in the title. So that's the first thing that tells you that is also unconstitutional. And we'll definitely get into that.
So I need to correct something on that episode. I'm glad you brought this up. In fact, this is the very first thing I'm going to cover on my program this morning. I have to correct something that I said in that episode. When I read the Sheridan Press article, I took it to mean that the Sheridan City Council gave $10,000 to Trout Unlimited. That was incorrect. They actually voted that down. The $10,000 was on the list of requests for Trout Unlimited, but the Sheridan City Council ended up voting that down. Now, that doesn't mean that they haven't given money to Trout Unlimited in the past, which they have. So the second thing I need to correct is Aaron Linden did not get a chance to vote on all of those distributions. His council seat was approved after they finished all of those free giveaways to all of their friends and neighbors. So the big takeaway here is that Trout Unlimited this year was not given money by the Sheridan City Council, and Aaron Linden didn't get a chance to vote on that. It was all the other Redcoats. So, got to lead with my mistakes on that one.
That is the standard. We do lead with our mistakes, and you're going to lead again on your show. So double coverage on that. And I could tell it'd be a little difficult. I almost made the same mistake when they put out the who requested versus what they amended it to versus what passed. The columns in the Sheridan Press news report online, it was a little difficult to tell reading across what was what. So I can understand how that could happen. I almost made the same mistake myself. Let's see. The Senate files that are on the governor's desk that have not been signed yet that are of note, SF-105, the Second Amendment Financial Privacy Act. That's going to go along with the other gun bills that the governor hasn't signed any of yet,
well,
including
that's kind of
Senate File 73.
You know, with gun bills, and I don't know why he does this, but he saves the gun bills for the very last. Even the Second Amendment Protection Act, he waited until, whew, man, it was almost, I think it was a good 3 weeks after the session before he signed that one, or 2 weeks, or, I mean, it was right at the end of the deadline. So I don't know why he saves gun bills for the last, but he does.
Yeah. Interesting one on the gun bills. You have the Second Amendment Financial Privacy Act, the Concealed Firearms Permit Eligibility, and the Prohibit Red Flag Gun Seizure Act all passed both chambers and is on the governor's desk. But the big one coming out of the House, House Bill 125, is actually sitting on his desk as a campaign promise from 2018. If a piece of legislation repealing gun-free zones ever comes to my desk, I will sign it. So you've got some decisions to make. I mean, we may have a whole free week of content depending on how House Bill 125 goes, because that is documented. That there's evidence of that. Even WyoFile, the CowPie, well, you know, the Red Star Tribune doesn't do Wyoming news anymore, but the Wyoming Turkey Vulture, Tribune Eagle, have all pointed out this was a campaign promise made by your governor. On the other hand, he's also shown that he's not really our governor. He's a de facto Sierra Club representative, and he's a super lame duck. He's no longer accountable and can do whatever he wants. He's been doing some pretty shady stuff over the last year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these killed with another BS excuse. Safety, security, we have other laws that cover this, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, sex offender registration, registerable offenses, Senate File 34, coming out of the judiciary, which is kind of surprising that that group of people in that committee actually brought this bill out of committee. But that's going to be an interesting one, because we're seeing, if you check out any of the Wyoming mainstream media, there's just story after story, day after day, of people being busted for sexual assault of a minor, production or possession of child pornography. It's getting really problematic. And I don't know that the sex offender registry is much of a deterrent, because a couple of these stories I'm reading have people that are already on the sex offender registry reoffending. So we may have to get into what we talk about on a regular basis, prosecuting the law as written and making sure that the definitions of the potential punishment are fully vested in that sentencing portion. And I don't think this is something we're going to get away from quickly. We need an overhaul of our judicial system, because we're talking right now about passing laws, but it doesn't matter if they're not enforced properly or the punishment is not equal to what you did and what the law says you can get for it.
I think you're exactly right.
So, yeah.
You know, we've got so many laws on the books that just aren't prosecuted. And a classic case is in Sheridan, Wyoming, and Johnson County, for that matter. We've got judges that hand out probation for infractions that in any other time would have warranted jail time. I mean, we're talking about like big time drug offenses, distribution of methamphetamine, people getting probation, repeat offenders. You know, you've been caught three times before doing the same thing, but that's okay. You don't have to go to Rawlins or Lusk. You know, we'll just give you probation. So there's a lot of things in Wyoming statute that we're just not prosecuting, whether it's on the House floor or not. Well, Joey, we've got about a minute and a half left. What do we got? What are we going to talk about on Crosstalk Live tonight or tomorrow?
Well, I do believe we're going to get into some of these education bills, all the way down to parents' right to know. There's a lot of things that have to do with what's going on in the schools, including the funding or the dismissal of the funding for additional mental health. There's a lot of misconceptions about what's going on there, what those bills actually said, And I'm seeing some demonization, you know, some incivility from the traditional Republicans and people who still, you know, wear that banner of elitist. So I think we need to deconstruct that. And the reason I really want to wait till Crosstalk Live is we'll have Ken there. He was presented with all these legislative actions. He was on the floor for debate the whole time. And I'd really like to get his take on why some of the things you're seeing on social media or in the mainstream liberal socialist news aren't correct. And it's going to all go back to it's because it's an election season and these people are scared. They're terrified. Not just that they're losing, that they're being found out to be corrupt. And that is why they're losing. So I think that's what Crosstalk Live is probably going to focus on tonight or tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, you can catch all of it on the Independence Network. We've got a great schedule for you. A lot of new programming that's coming on the network. Don't miss a minute of Just Blame Joey, Cowboy State Politics, The Ramble Room with Ken Pendergraft, The Hair Affair with Christine, Wide Right Turn, and we've got a couple of other programs coming. So just keep it playing in the background, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning.